The following is a speakerphone recording of a webinar held by the Island Institute on Offshore Wind Power in the Gulf of Maine on July 7, 2011. Their webinar is 77 minutes long.
So we're just going to wait for a couple more people to get on, so thank you.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for participating in the Island Institute's Offshore Wind Energy Information Exchange webinar. My name is Brigitte Poulsen, and I am the Community Energy Fellow at the Island Institute. I am joined here by my colleagues Heather Deese, Suzanne Pudi, and Amanda LaBelle. Our goal today in hosting this webinar is to give participants a better understanding of what is happening with offshore wind energy development at multiple levels, and to share with you all what the Island Institute will be doing over the next several months with regards to its community engagement efforts. So before we begin, I just want to share a few technical things with you. All speakers are currently on mute and will be until the end of the call. Unless you are a speaker, you do not need to worry about muting your own phone. If at any point you get dropped off of the call, you can find call-in information by viewing the note board that is currently up on your screen. If you do not see this note board during the presentation, you can find the information by going to the top right-hand corner of your main screen and clicking on the line that reads Meeting Information. This webinar is being recorded, and some or all of it will be made available on the Island Institute website in the coming weeks, so please watch your emails for more information on this. We do have technical assistance on the line, so if at any point you need to ask a technical question or are having trouble with the webinar, please direct your questions to Mega Meeting Tech Help. You can do this by clicking on that name in the user list and initiating a private chat. And depending on what kind of computer you have, you may need to either single-click or double-click on the name Mega Meeting Tech Help. Finally, we are really excited to share with you that this event is one of the many that will take place in the coming months and years at the Island Institute that utilizes distance learning technology. Between this webinar system and the 14 Tanberg video conference units that we have installed in Island Institute, we are looking to shorten the distance among our partners, make information more readily accessible, and lower our carbon footprint. It's pretty cool. We have some people on this call who are joining us from D.C., so really connecting a lot of different people in a lot of different places. I'm just going to take a moment to bring up the presentation and walk you through the agenda. So we are going to, first, please note that you'll have several opportunities to ask questions throughout the webinar. We are logged on here at the Island Institute. If you have questions at any point, please initiate a private chat with us and send in your questions that way. Again, you just need to double or single click on the name Island Institute and initiate a private chat with us. We will make note of your questions and do our best to answer what we can during the times that we have set aside for questions and feedback. So Heather Deese at the Island Institute is going to start us off with a status update on offshore wind energy in Maine. She will be potentially joined by Jake Ward of the University of Maine and Matt Nixon of the Maine State Planning Office and Maine Coastal Program. After that, we'll move into questions. Again, if you have questions during the webinar, please write them into the Island Institute via your private chat function. After that, we will give an overview of the Island Institute's community engagement plans over the coming months. This will be followed by a brief update from the Gulf of Maine Research Institute, and there will then be another opportunity for group questions and feedback before we conclude. At that time, we will initiate a poll where we'll ask you to answer a few questions. And then again, after the webinar is completed, you will be prompted to complete a short survey. So please do take a moment to do this. There are four short questions, and we would really appreciate your feedback. So I'm going to hand it off to you, Heather.
Hello, everybody. This is Heather Deese. I'm the Senior Programs Director for Marine Initiatives at the Island Institute. I think I've probably met many of you, and it's good to meet the rest of you electronically, although one-way communication at this point. We are looking forward to hearing people's questions and comments via the question sessions and survey at the end today. So just for background on the Island Institute as an organization, we are a nonprofit headquartered in Rockland, Maine. We serve the island and working waterfront communities in the northern Gulf of Maine, and our focus on offshore wind energy arises from the threat of energy costs to island communities and the potential for benefits from a new industry offshore, as well as the high dependence in communities on commercial fisheries and tourism, and just lots of questions and ideas amongst community members about what the relationship between these existing uses and potential new use of offshore areas for wind energy will lead to. So our priorities in terms of what we're doing as an organization is on research, providing technical support, outreach, communication, and public and formal school education projects. Our stance on offshore wind energy is pretty straightforward. We're supportive of renewable energy in general and ocean wind energy in particular that is appropriately sited and where there are local benefits in line with any local cost. So as an organization, we are focused on a number of areas of programming right now related to offshore wind energy. A lot of what we're working on involves just being out in the field, on the dock, on boats, in the communities, hearing from people on the ground, along the coast, about what their concerns and ideas are related to offshore wind energy. Arising from what we've heard from people, we put together a series of events which we're calling the Offshore Wind Energy Information Exchange. And we've started with some of those, and that is planned to continue through early 2012. And that's a lot of the focus of what we are going to be talking about today. In addition, we have been able to work with the University of Maine and their other partners in the Deep Sea Wind Consortium, particularly around the research for developing and testing performance of scale model floating wind turbines at the State of Maine designated test site south of Monhegan Island. And we'll have a brief update on that work today. My role there is in co-managing the environmental research, and we've also worked on researching environmental impacts and stakeholder priorities for the Maine Offshore Wind Report, which was published last February. So what is offshore wind energy? Probably many of you have seen some of these images before. There's been a lot of interest in the R&D community, as well as from governments, both our own government here in the U.S. and overseas, in trying to work towards funding the basic research and development and actual implementation and build in the water of floating offshore wind turbines beyond the shallower water bottom-mounted turbines that are currently in place. For the purposes of the coast of Maine, one of the main motivations for this is just that the water is quite deep. I do have a slide showing one of the early prototypes for tidal turbine development by the Ocean Renewable Power Company, which is also going on along the coast of Maine. It's not the focus of what we're talking about today, but it is part of the potential for offshore renewable energy development, so I did just want to give that a mention. The motivation for offshore wind energy is related to the resource, the strength of the winds offshore, and the proximity to major load centers of high-density population areas along the coast of our country. As a result, there has been a high level of interest and support in terms of funding and policy, government agency efforts at the federal level to fund and encourage the work that's needed to actually get offshore wind developed in this country. The main motivation from the Northern Gulf of Maine, the perspective of the state of Maine and those of us who live and work here, is that we are highly dependent on fossil fuels, both here in our state and more broadly in the region, but we are in a particularly vulnerable situation with our dependence on heating oil and high vehicle mileage. We also, in terms of the resource, have very strong winds off the coast. They're steadier, and with the potential for floating platforms, conflicts with current uses could hopefully be minimized with actual sighting far enough from shore. The state of Maine has developed a series of goals for wind power, both terrestrially and offshore. The 5-gigawatt goal for offshore wind energy development by 2030 is actually 20% of the national goal for wind energy development, and that is based on the assessment of what's potentially feasible in the Gulf of Maine. Because what it requires is thinking beyond our current use of electricity for energy to thinking about other ways in which we use energy. This pie chart shows an approximation of the amount of total energy used, or to generate our other energy needs that are currently filled by fossil fuels, heating, transportation, through electricity. However, for some of the particular floating energy platforms, the technology is in very early stages. That is variable dependent on the platform type. There is currently one full-scale prototype in existence for a floating offshore wind turbine, and that is deployed by the company Statoil. It's called the Hywind Project, and is located about 10 miles off the coast of Norway. There are other prototypes that are planned for deployment, both here in the U.S., led by the University of Maine, and offshore of other countries around the world. However, there are major challenges and questions for all of us along the coast here about how this development could or should happen offshore and the relationship to what currently happens offshore. It's not an empty ocean. And if those people and communities who currently use and depend upon the ocean are going to be giving up some use of space and resources, what does that mean for them and what does that mean for our coastal communities? The current status for the state in terms of the work here and what has been happening and may be happening in the future, I'm just going to provide a couple of dot points here, and then Matt Nixon, who's on the line, will be able to provide some more detail from the state perspective from the Maine Coastal Program. Jake Ward from the University of Maine, I believe, is not able to be on the line with us today, but has provided a couple of slides that I can overview on the university's work. You can see from the list of items here that there has been a fair amount of work at the state level with the Governor's Ocean Energy Task Force appointed by former Governor Baldacci 3 years ago. There were two pieces of legislation that resulted from that, one which drove selection of research and development sites in state waters, and another of which set up a requirement for the Public Utilities Commission to consider proposals for developers to develop a 25-megawatt pilot project offshore and sell power to one of the main utilities at a subsidized rate. I'm going to let Matt Nixon address the work from the federal agencies in terms of FOMRA, which is the regulatory agency for submerged lands leasing, and other federal agencies involved with marine spatial planning or other efforts in the region that are related to siting questions. And then I'll just talk briefly about the University of Maine-led efforts south of Monhegan, focused on deployment south of Monhegan Island, and also mention that separate from research at the universities throughout the country and federal and state efforts to encourage development, there's also substantial work being done by interested developers themselves, and the private sector obviously plays a major role in this work and are at different stages of interest individually, both off the coast of Maine and elsewhere along the Atlantic seaboard in driving this development. So Jake is not on the line, that's correct? Okay, I'm going to switch over and show a couple of slides that Jake Ward, who is the Assistant Vice President for Research and Development at the University of Maine, I believe if I am recalling his title correctly, Jake is one of the key people involved with the Deep Sea Wind Consortium at the university, and he unfortunately was unable to join us today, but he did provide a couple of overview slides about their work that I just want to be able to show to you, and we can answer questions if we can about these in another couple of minutes, or refer you to him. He's always happy to be a point of contact and answer questions. So the overall outline of the work that the University and Deep Sea Wind Consortium have put together involves working from a series of design bids from different private design companies, running a design competition, selecting the designs that have the most, that were ranked the highest for actual performance, and then going through a series of scale model testings. The 1 to 50th scale model testing was completed this fall through tank tests in a wind and wave tank facility in Norway, and there's a lot of data that has resulted from that. That was done on the tension leg platform, which is shown on the right in this slide, which is one of the three main platform types
being investigated. The data from that testing is under analysis right now, and the final design and preparation for build of a 1/3 scale model is currently in process with Shinbro and BIW, working closely with the University of Maine. The plan now pending approvals of permitting applications to state and federal agencies would be for deployment of a 1/3 scale unit south of Monhegan Island for 4 months during next summer and fall between July and October 2012. And then in the longer time frame, the university and its partners in Deep Sea Wind are interested in supporting the R&D needs around potential development of pilot wind farms and larger commercial scale efforts. There's also been substantial federal government and state government R&D investment in new wind laboratory facilities up at the university. So just one more slide as a summary on the Monhegan test site plans. Monhegan Island is about 10 miles south of Port Clyde, Maine, just to the west of Penobscot Bay, about halfway up the coast, east to west or north to south along the coast of Maine. Monhegan is offshore and therefore the state boundary from state and federal waters, bumps out around the island 3 miles offshore, and the test site itself runs from 2 miles offshore to that edge of the state boundary, is about a little bit over 2 square miles in size. The green dot shown in the middle of the slide that indicates the position potentially of a floating turbine test deployment site is actually, I think, currently being updated, so that actual location is still under development. But the unit that is under the current design is this tension-leg platform. It will be about 100 feet tall, another, I believe, 30 feet above that in terms of the radius length of the individual turbine blades. The idea, again, is to deploy this design for 4 months, starting in July 2012, partway through October. And the purpose of that seasonal window is in order to mimic the scale of conditions of 1/3 storm conditions, particularly for significant wave heights that you would see for a 50-year storm. So, in other words, 1/3 of the equivalent wave size of what you would see in the worst 50-year storm in January or February is highly likely to happen by October or November in the Gulf of Maine, and that's what the percentages at the top of this slide show. So I'm going to wrap up there in terms of the overview of the Deep Sea Wind test project at Monhegan. There are a number of associated studies on environmental monitoring and engineering and other aspects of that work, but I want to make sure that we can move on now to allow Matt Nixon to talk from the state perspective about the update on what is happening here in Maine.
Thank you, Heather. All good to go?
Good to go.
All right. Well, as Heather said, my name is Matt Nixon. I'm with the State Planning Office Maine Coastal Program. I was asked to give a few updates on current activities in the state and I guess at the federal level as well. So I'll just start over the final months of the Baldacci administration. Just a little bit of background information here. The state held several intergovernmental task force meetings with the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management Regulation and Enforcement, also known as BOEM. These meetings were meant for thoughtful discourse on the potential for ocean energy development in the Gulf of Maine. In case any of you are sleeping, I hope my slide will wake you up. Most states on the eastern seaboard have engaged BOEM in this type of fashion, with some states actually having joint task forces as a result of prospective sites on the OCS, the Outer Continental Shelf, that might be lying adjacent to the two states' respective jurisdictions. Massachusetts and Rhode Island are a good example of this. They have their own joint task force. The main BOEM task force did not meet to discuss specific sites, though several large areas meeting some basic criteria that were reflected in the state's 25-megawatt RFP that Heather mentioned earlier, which included, some of those criteria included any area being at least 10 nautical miles from shore and inhabited islands and having certain depth restrictions favoring deep water. These large areas were briefly discussed at the last task force meeting we had. At this point in time, the state fully expects any proposal coming as a response to the RFP from a potential developer to include an area or a site identified by the company itself. So anyone responding to that 25 megawatt RFP, we would suspect they would have an area in mind already. So as a result of this, the governor's office has begun the task of reappointing members of state government to the Bowen, Maine Task Force. Previous members included commissioners from the Baldacci administration, et cetera. So new, as there are new commissioners, they have to be reappointed to this task force. The administration does see the potential that offshore wind has for the state of Maine in terms of jobs, reducing reliance on foreign energy, and eventually, most importantly, I have to emphasize eventually here, cheaper energy prices. The administration also sees Maine's current role right now as it relates to offshore energy in a purely research and development related light. Whether that R&D is through the UMaine test site off Monhegan that Heather mentioned or through the PUC's 25 megawatt RFP for a floating demonstration project, obviously meeting the criteria I mentioned above. Over the last month, the state has also re-engaged with BOEM regarding the status of BOEM's Smart from the Start program and a previous proposal made by Maine for a pilot project, which was sort of tailored to the 25 megawatt RFP proposal as well. That would allow for the combination of certain processes that occur during a permitting decision. The state is continuing to collect relevant data, including human uses, information on areas important to coastal constituents and fishermen, vessel traffic data, and other biological and environmental data on species movement and habitat. The state also has begun mapping the ocean bottom with a high-resolution bathymetric equipment, a product that has been needed in Maine for quite some time. If you ever take a look at a mosaic of New England in terms of what parts of the bottom of the ocean have been mapped, Maine is pretty much a gaping hole compared to our Canadian neighbors to the north and southern New England. Finally, the state expects that over the course of the next 6 months, the Bowen, Maine Task Force will reconvene for the purpose of discussing the results of the 25 megawatt RFP and any subsequent responses to it. And Heather, I'm going to hold off my outreach paragraph, if you will, until we actually get to that section, if that works for you.
That sounds great. Thank you, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, since we're waiting for questions, can I ask you to jump into your outreach paragraph now?
I could certainly do that. That's pretty quick. Heather had also asked to ask me to provide a state perspective on outreach efforts right now, at least from the state level. So at this point, the state really considers its role is keeping a of the many outreach efforts currently underway in both the academic and NGO communities throughout the state. If and when a definitive proposal is made to construct a pilot floating wind farm or another development, decisions will be made, I guess, at that point as to the extent of the actual involvement by the state, ensuring any accurate message and portrayal of current processes and events and listening to the results of current outreach efforts are the primary focus now. And done.
Thank you, Matt. So we actually had a question come in from Kathy Lane asking either, I guess, Heather or Matt to chime in and give us a little bit of a sense as to how what's going on in Maine compares to other states along the East Coast. Okay, this is Heather. I will give a start on that and see, Matt, if you have anything to add. I think in general there has been a lot of focus and I would say more rapid movement and specific proposals for development for offshore wind energy projects south of Cape Cod than there has been north of Cape Cod. And to date, I think that that has been because the technology is currently in existence and has been deployed in many places offshore of Europe, especially with more than 800 turbines in the water off the coast of European countries compared to none here in the U.S. And that technology for seafloor mounted turbines is in existence, and there's, you know, how it works is fairly well understood by comparison with the technology for floating platforms that would be required for the deeper Gulf of Maine. Matt, do you have anything to add to that?
That sounds good to me, Heather.
Suzanne, do you have another question?
Yeah, we have a question from Becky about the siting within 10 miles of Monhegan and if that will be a problem going forward with siting. Does it become precedent? So I think maybe getting into the question of that, the 10-mile selection for the most recent request for proposals and maybe what that's going to mean going forward, and maybe just a bit of clarity as to the 10-mile and 10 miles from where.
So there are two very different kind of categories of siting locations, and we moved through some of that fairly quickly. One is that within state water, so that's within that 3-mile line, which does bump out around Monhegan and Matinicus and other islands along the main coast, within those state waters that extend 3 miles from the coast and islands, there has been an established process that would be the regulatory decision-making responsibility for commercial development. So there could be commercial proposals from developers within state waters. However, there hasn't been any sort of clear interest, and there certainly is not any existing push towards incentivizing development within 3 miles within state waters. What there has been within state waters is the siting of the test sites, and the one south of Monhegan, pretty much directly south of the island, is the one currently under consideration for deployment by the University of Maine for some of its R&D work. The requirements for the potential for incentivizing commercial development, a convenient map, thank you, Brigida. The potential for incentivizing development through a subsidized rate for a long-term rate at which power would be purchased from a developer's project and sold into the grid in Maine to one of our two major utilities, is being considered through the Maine Public Utility Commission, as Matt mentioned. And the green line on this chart in the lower right-hand corner represents a line that is 10 miles from shore and all inhabited islands. So that line bumps out around Monhegan and around Matinicus, southwest and south of Penobscot Bay. It does not bump out around Mount Desert Rocks in down east Maine because that is not considered an inhabited island. So this line, in most cases, is 7 miles beyond the state limit. And outside of that line, that the commercial development of a pilot 25-megawatt project would be considered by the Public Utility Commission. Whether that would be 10 miles south of Monhegan, or 10 miles south of Matinicus, or 10 miles south of Portland, would be up to the specific interests of developers putting in proposals. Matt, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think you clarified that nicely, Heather.
Thank you, Matt.
We have another question about how the corridors to connect wind sites to the grid are being considered and being examined. So I guess just sort of more specifically how the transmission grid on land is being considered in terms of siting offshore wind projects.
This is an area that I think is really important and a very key part of the overall decision-making process, as I understand it, for a developer or for state and federal agencies trying to consider where it might make the most sense, either from a developer's perspective or from a societal perspective, to have additional electricity generation. And that is, whether you're on land or at sea, the size of the grid and the capacity to carry more electricity in the existing system is a major consideration. So with that said, there was a piece of research and investigation done last fall and winter as part of the development of the Maine Offshore Wind Report, which I mentioned briefly earlier. That report was coordinated by the University of Maine, was put together with funding from the Department of Energy, part of their R&D funding that they've managed to bring into the state. And they worked with many different consultants and organizations to put together information about specific parts of the overall question about offshore wind energy development. And the locations of where those grid interconnections are currently in existence that would be large enough to take additional capacity was a key part of that report. So for anyone who is particularly interested, I would definitely encourage you to Google Maine Offshore Wind Report, or we can email out the resources and look at the section that deals with the grid interconnects. I think
the short story, as I understand it, and I'm not a grid expert, but the short story is that there are interconnection points with capacity to take additional commercial scale power from basically Penobscot Bay and west, but that from Penobscot Bay and east, right along the coast, the capacity to add additional power into the grid is much lower and would require more upgrades on the land side.
Okay, that's great. I have a follow-up question on that, which is that someone has heard that the likelihood that a corridor to Massachusetts on the ocean floor could be developed basically excluding Maine from all of this, which would mean that Maine wouldn't see any of the benefit from the power generated. Is that correct?
I have definitely heard that there are proposals, there have been proposals in the past for large offshore cables to connect, for example, Nova Scotia and southern New England, south of Georges Bank. There is currently a large proposal called the Google-backed pipeline informally, but I believe it's called the Atlantic Wind Connection, which would build a large offshore connection line along the Mid-Atlantic. There are, I believe, developers interested in building a similar offshore connection line from somewhere along the main coast to somewhere off Boston in order to potentially pick up and carry power from offshore wind turbine facilities south. I don't know enough about the pricing and considerations of where the power gets sold to understand what the implications of that pipeline proposal would be for where the benefits or power agreements would be. I don't know, Matt, if you can add anything to that.
No, I'm just looking through the RFP right now. I seem to remember there being some sort of section in there stipulating that whoever applies to at least this particular RFP we've been talking about, the 25-megawatt one, has to connect in Maine.
Yeah, I believe that there is a requirement in the RFP for the 25-megawatt pilot project.
Right,
that would require the power to be sold in Maine. There have been similar requirements from states up and down the Atlantic seaboard who have similarly been trying to incentivize or attract development that would come, that would have benefits that flow to their states in terms of the shoreside infrastructure and jobs, and as a result have required power to be sold into their states. And as I understand it, there have been a lot of interesting legal questions around whether that is allowed under Commerce Act. So I think that this is a really complicated area in terms of this resource development in federal waters.
Okay, we're going to take one last question before we move on to the next section, and I think this actually might be a good segue to the next piece of the webinar. The question is whether or not the Island Institute, or I suppose other organizations, are facing any challenges in terms of engaging the island fishing community or fishermen in general with thoughts on offshore wind. Has the MLA, the Maine Lobstermen's Association, weighed in on this issue?
That's a great question and a really important one from our perspective. We work closely with the Maine Lobstermen's Association and a number of other fisheries groups around the state, as do others at state agencies and other groups like Sea Grant, and GMRI, who are working on outreach and who we're going to be talking about or hearing from a little bit later. In general, we know that for people who are making their living on the water, they have immediate concerns like how much they're going to pay for fuel, how much they're going to pay for bait, whether they can get out fishing, whether they're going to be able to make money this week. And there are many regulations or issues that come down the pike at them that are of immediate concern and they know they need to deal with, that often make it harder to take the time or energy or effort to learn about or deal with issues like offshore wind energy that may or may not happen soon enough for it to be an immediate concern. That said, we certainly have a lot of regular engagement with leaders within island communities and other fishing communities who are very engaged, are learning a lot, and are really going to, I think, be able to be spokesmen, you know, for their communities on where they see that they need to be involved and where development of offshore wind energy may impact them. I actually presented a similar presentation to what I started this webinar with to the Maine Lobstermen's Association Board of Directors for their last meeting last month, and they invited us to do that just exactly because they want to be up to speed on these conversations. So they are definitely paying attention to it. So we're going to have presentations about the actual information exchange project and programming that we are in the middle of and want to be able to share with everybody today. Suzanne Pudi, who's our Community Energy Director, is going to start off talking about this project, and she will be joined by Amanda LaBelle, who's our Marine Programs Associate. We will, again, have some time to have another organization from the state talk about other work that others are doing on outreach, and we'll also have questions at the end of this session. So feel free to type in questions as we go, and we will respond to them at the end of this next few minutes. Great. Thank you, Heather. This is just a brief overview of what we're going to try to hit in these next couple of minutes to give you an understanding of basically what has gone on in terms of stakeholder engagement and public discussion about offshore wind in the state of Maine to date, and how that's informed our thinking here at the Island Institute in creating a series of events and activities that will take place in the coming months. I'm not going to spend too much time going over what is actually a pretty lengthy but not actually comprehensive list of other events and activities and meetings that have taken place to discuss the potential for ocean energy in Maine to date. We do have a list here starting with engagement around the demonstration areas that were ultimately identified within state waters that began back in 2009. What I tried to outline here are some of the lessons that I think that those of us engaging in this issue have learned through each of these events. And I think that the interesting piece that we can recognize is the fact that this conversation in Maine started with a focus on demonstration and research and development work happening in state waters. And now added to that, there is attention to what's going on farther offshore in federal waters. You've got a note here about the Mapping Working Waters project that the Island Institute has been working on to better understand how commercial fishermen and other marine users are using the waters in both state and federal areas offshore, as well as reference to a conference that the Island Institute co-sponsored last December, through which a lot of really interesting information emerged in terms of stakeholder concerns and interests and questions about the topic. We also, as Heather referenced, the University of Maine put together the offshore wind report that came out last February, and the Island Institute had the opportunity to provide input on the different stakeholder questions, concerns, and interests that we've heard to date, and outline the diverse group of stakeholders that operate in and around the Gulf of Maine that should be a part of the conversation as offshore wind is discussed here in the state. Sea Grant and the Deep Sea Wind Team hosted a series of evening meetings this past spring in relation to their test site off of Monhegan. And we just wanted to note some interesting survey work that has taken place out of the University of Maine to really help get a sense of broader perception along the coast and the state for around offshore wind, as well as the fact I just wanted to reference the New England Wind Energy Education Project is an initiative that has been taking place for the past year or so. Has been very much focused on terrestrial wind development, but I think has sort of created a focus on the need for better information and engagement around wind power issues throughout our region, and I'd urge anyone that's interested in getting some of those resources to check out that link there. So throughout all these efforts, you know, the ones that were noted and the many that we didn't put on the slide, the question is, you know, what have we learned so far about where the public and other individuals, entities, interests in the state of Maine are at in terms of the discussion with offshore wind? And right, we have here is an excerpt from the Maine Deepwater Offshore Wind Report from the chapter on environmental stakeholders. And as you can see, these are the types of questions that, you know, many of us are asking in our own heads that we hear asked
you know, all over the state. What, you know, how is this going to impact us as Maine residents, as fishermen, as ratepayers, and how could we see benefit, or how may we see impact that could potentially be balanced with some additional benefit? So this, again, if you're interested in these questions, I'd urge you to check out that report in that chapter, which goes into great detail about interests and questions from commercial fisheries, from island power utilities, to coastal land trusts, environmental organizations, really trying to give all of us a sense of where the interests lie on this issue. In addition to that, we had the opportunity to get some really good feedback from the Offshore Wind Conference that was hosted last December. What we have here is a survey, post-conference survey that attendees completed, giving us a sense of where their level of understanding lies with various aspects of offshore wind development. And it's not a scientific survey by any means. We clearly asked them this after they sat through a day of various panel discussions on these topics. So it's certainly not that we're saying this is indicative of the entire coast, but what's interesting is that, you know, we can see that there's certainly an interest in learning more about a lot of these key issues, ranging from environmental impacts to technical issues and economics, and I think particularly there's an interest in the communities that have entered into this discussion before we have here in Maine and what their experiences have been like to date. So what we were able to do at the Island Institute, recognizing that this was an issue of real interest for many of our partners along the coast, we felt that it was important to sort of go beyond the efforts or build upon the efforts that have taken place so far and try to address the needs and questions and concerns that have been expressed by the coastal residents, island residents, commercial fishermen, and others that we work with on a day-to-day basis. So what we have set out to do is this offshore wind energy information exchange. And there's sort of a couple of different goals that we're trying to achieve. The first piece is to try to increase the quality of information available to a broad range of stakeholders, recognizing that there are a lot of different interests that stand to potentially be impacted or have a role in shaping the discussions around offshore wind energy, and that all of those different pieces of these stakeholder groups really stand to learn a lot from each other. I think that we have recognized that there's a real interest in going beyond the basic level of information that has been shared in some of these events, and that there's a real interest in sort of digging into the nitty-gritty, as we call it, of different topics, whether it be sound impacts or submarine cabling or the economics of offshore wind. People are really wanting to dig into those issues. I think also recognizing that there is a real wealth of knowledge here along the coast that we can talk about inviting experts to participate in our events, but recognizing that really everybody should be considered an expert. There are folks that have made their living out on the water for decades, and they have a lot to share in terms of other development and businesses that may come to join them there on the water. And so really trying to create an environment where there is good information that addresses a lot of interests and respects the local knowledge that's already there. Building off of that, we think it's important to try to facilitate relationship building between these stakeholder groups and, again, sort of connect the experts, quote-unquote experts, to each other so that questions can be asked directly and conversations can take place more easily. And then finally have the opportunity to document what we've been learning throughout this process and share it with others, recognizing that, again, these conversations are going on up and down the coast. We're very keen to learn about efforts to engage communities and others in these discussions that have taken place before our efforts, as well as try to share sort of the lessons learned or key themes that emerge from this work with others as well. So this webinar is sort of the beginning of that effort, and we hope to be able to continue to share the information that we gain based on these experiences in the coming months. So how are we hoping to achieve these goals? There are a couple of different pieces to this information exchange that we'll go through in more detail in just a few moments. Basically four pieces, the first one being a series of briefings that we've been having with various individuals and groups to give them a really good background on offshore wind, give them the chance to ask questions that they may have or try to clarify things that they've heard. Heather gave the example earlier of talking to the board of the Maine Lobstermen's Association. I think that that's certainly an example of those efforts there. We are also in the process of working with other organizations and experts, area topic experts, to produce a series of fact sheets that will be fact-based and drafted in consultation with others and peer-reviewed and distributed widely along the coast in the hopes that we've got some good, solid, easily digestible and accessible information to share with the public. We are also planning a series of forums or in-depth information sessions that basically will enable us to spend a couple of hours and dig into various topics of interest in greater detail than what some people have maybe heard about to date. The idea there, again, is to recognize that there are many, many different types of individuals or organizations that bring various strengths, experiences, and knowledge to the table, and creating a space for them to share all of that. And finally, perhaps what some of us are most interested in or excited about is a series of tours that is going to enable various stakeholders to spend time with each other out in communities, on the waterfront, at wind turbine sites, to really get a sense of the various different work environments engaged or involved in this discussion about offshore wind development, exchange information once again, and contribute to that relationship building and communication across sectors. So, those are the primary components of the information exchange, and what I will go into now with Amanda LaBelle is the series of events that we will be hosting now until next spring. And I hope that as you hear us go through these events, that you can think about the potential areas of collaboration where the Island Institute might be able to partner with you and your organization. Ideas to improve these events and suggestions that you might be able to share with us. We are certainly still in the process of nailing down some of the details on these events and certainly want to make sure that they are relevant and useful to folks who want to engage in these conversations. So I'll pass it over to Amanda to start. Amanda is actually going to be our point person on all of the tours that we plan. There are a lot of logistics for her to wrap her head around, but as she'll tell you, things went pretty successfully last week for a tour that we posted. So I'll hand it over to you, Amanda.
Sure. Thanks, Suzanne. So we're just going to walk you through kind of the calendar of these events that we have lined up in chronological order. So Suzanne and I will kind of hop back and forth, and I'm gonna walk you through the tour pieces. So as Suzanne said, we just had our first event. We took a bus and we visited three different sites. This tour was based primarily on questions and concerns and curiosities that we had heard expressed largely by those representing the commercial fisheries. So we had framed it with those questions in mind, and we're really focusing largely on the design of physical infrastructure related to offshore wind development. So what we did was we started out by visiting Beaver Ridge Wind Project in Freedom, Maine, to just give folks a chance to stand next to a wind turbine in a terrestrial setting. There are three turbines there that are each 1.5 megawatts, so smaller than what we would expect to see offshore, but it still, I think, gave folks a really strong impression of kind of the scale that these things are and what they look like and how it just feels to be in proximity to them. From there, we went up to the University of Maine and spent some time with Jake Ward and a graduate student, Heather Barton, up there touring the AEWC Composites Lab and learning also about the 1/50th scale turbine that has been developed at the university and was just being tested in the Netherlands. Leaving there, we went to the Front Street Shipyard and met with one of the managing partner there to learn a little bit about their thoughts on job development and the potential for the manufacture of components for turbines. So it went really well. We had a great time. I think everybody had a good chance to interact with kind of physical spaces and structures. We also spent some time speaking with an expert in cabling, so we get to learn a little bit more about how that would work as well. From there, I'm going to pass it back to Suzanne so she can talk you through the next couple of them.
So we are in the process of completing our second event. We hope you're all enjoying it and finding this useful. I think the intent here was certainly that we recognize that there are a number of other individuals and organizations that are working hard on this issue from a variety of different perspectives, and we wanted to make sure that we had the opportunity to sort of do one of those briefings in a more interactive online way through the webinar. We are certainly interested in working, like I said earlier, with other partners on this work, and this we see as an opportunity to get some input from all of you on how to actually achieve that goal.
So I'm going to step back in and tell you about the next event that we have coming up in the not too distant future, which will be our second tour. We're going to be meeting up with a group in Port Clyde to learn a little bit about, spend some time in a coastal community learning about how...
You will now be disconnected by the leader.
And how people expect to potentially be interacting with offshore wind development from kind of a coastal community perspective. So the hope is to bring folks from state agencies, developers, manufacturers, other industry representatives down to that community and spend some time learning about coastal businesses, local political structures, spending some time aboard a fishing vessel to really have some time interacting with gear and understanding how that works, as well as technology that's on boats, and also just hearing from fishermen a little bit about how they observe and interact with their seascape and really kind of understanding what that means. Great, and I just want to make a note that in these bulleted lists, the piece on the audience, I think that one piece that we'd like to stress is that the audience is not exclusive or only confined to the different stakeholder groups that we've listed here. The idea is so that we have the opportunity to address the types of questions and concerns and interests that we've heard expressed from those groups during that time, but recognizing that the more diverse group of participants we're able to attract, the better types of conversations and discussions and information exchange that we'll be able to experience. And so it is certainly not meant to be exclusive, but just recognizing that there are a host of different questions and interests that we want to make sure we have the opportunity to address. In August, we will be planning an event that we're calling On the Horizon. It's going to take place here in Rockland, Maine, where the Island Institute is based, just across the street at the historic Strand Theater. It's an event that is going to incorporate both a film screening of a film that was recently, short film recently created called Islands in the Wind, that talks about a community-owned terrestrial wind project, and then talks about how Maine's discussion and focus on wind power has now expanded to also include offshore wind and basically create an opportunity for attendees of the event to ask questions to a panel of experts. Currently we have confirmed Dr. Habib Dagher from the University of Maine, Dave Cousins from the Maine Lobstermen's Association, Ted Kaufman from Maine Audubon Society, Marjorie Stratton is the town manager of the town of Vinyl Haven, and hope to add a few others to that list so that we can address a variety of questions around offshore wind. Moving into September, we'll be hosting an event we're currently calling the Sights and Sounds of Offshore Wind Energy. It will provide us with an opportunity to dig more into questions about visual impacts, how visualizations are created. We are lucky enough to have a gentleman by the name of Tyler Studd, who recently completed a fellowship with an organization called Vineyard Power down on Martha's Vineyard. Tyler created a number of visual simulations for a potential community-owned project off of the Vineyard offshore project, and he will be coming to talk about his work on creating those visualizations and go into some detail about the methodology used
receive them, as well as to talk about an offshore wind site selection map, an interactive tool that is available online for residents of Martha's Vineyard to provide input on their preference for siting of a community-owned project down there. In addition to the discussion on visualization, we hope to be able to cover the issue of noise propagation both above and underwater during that session. We're currently working to confirm a speaker on that topic, but hope that we'll be able to cover that in some detail as well. Then in October or November, most likely early November, we're looking to repeat the tour that we just had to Freedom and the University and the Boatyard in Belfast. So we'll be looking to do that again once fishing winds down a bit. Moving into the fall, we definitely recognize the interest in different environmental monitoring studies that have taken place at offshore wind sites at Europe, as well as the pre-construction monitoring that's taken place at the Monhegan test site. So we'll be working with various scientists and others to talk about the technology, the methodologies, and the findings of that work to date. And again, recognizing that there's a lot of local knowledge about these issues and sort of comparing notes on the environmental impact piece. We will then wait until probably the end of the year or early 2012 for an information session or a forum on what we're calling on the home front for the time being. The idea here is recognizing that in addition to individuals who spend a lot of time on the water, there are also coastal communities that stand to interact with offshore wind development, and we'd like to spend some time talking both about how coastal communities could play a role in discussions around cable interconnects, as well as having relations with developers and potential employment opportunities. We'd also like to talk in a little bit more detail of how offshore wind turbines might interact with those marine users, and talking a little bit more detail about the setbacks from around the turbine and the different types of gear that may be used in that area. And then the last event that we have planned for now is we're shooting for doing in February of 2012, and we really want to spend some time looking at kind of the capacity for in-state fabrication and deployment of turbines and components. So the idea was to visit potentially either Chimbrough or Bath Ironworks and maybe also see some port facilities and understand a little better the capacity of those businesses to manufacture these components, and also to learn a bit about the potential for job creation through offshore wind energy. The reason that that tour would be in February would be that is when it's expected that the fabrication of turbine nodes deployed in the Monhegan test site would be in those facilities, so it would give folks a chance to see what a one-third scale fabrication looks like. Great. So this is Heather. Again, thank you, Suzanne and Amanda, for providing the overview of all of the exciting activities that we are working on. Pass the mic over in just a second to Alan Round, who is an intern working this summer with the Gulf of Maine Research Institute with support from BC Wind through their summer internship program. But before I do that, I just did want to mention we have a number of groups that we've been working with very closely over the last year on discussions and joint efforts and individual coordinated efforts to all engage in the ways that we can with the communities that we work with along the coast and throughout the state and region, in the case of Manomet Center and QLF, to really think about how we can best all leverage the resources that we have to be able to do outreach events. Many of these groups sponsored or helped put together the conference last December that we mentioned earlier, and many of these groups have been acting as advisors to us for this current information exchange event, and I did just want to thank all of their efforts in helping us steer what we're doing. So Alan, if you're on the line and want to take over the mic, I will pass it to you.
Okay, thank you. So I'm Alan Round. I am an intern with GMRI, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the purpose of GMRI's upcoming developmental sessions in November. And they're regarding coastal marine spatial planning and ocean wind energy. GMRI intends to bring knowledgeable individuals and organizations who have experience with these issues and stakeholders, and we're primarily targeting folks in the fishing industry, together to develop understanding, ask questions, raise concerns, and be able to proceed with appropriate action. We'll give stakeholders an introduction of the past, present, and potential future of both CMSP and ocean wind energy. And currently, one of the main drivers for the CMSP process is the implementation of wind energy turbines, but though these issues are related, we feel that they're distinct from each other, and so we'll cover them separately. And some of the guiding questions for the upcoming sessions will be in regards to coastal marine spatial planning. What is it, and who has been implementing it? What are the future plans and visions? And for ocean wind energy, we'll cover what is it and what is it not? What has been happening with ocean wind energy development, and where is it going? Will ocean wind energy be a competing use or a possible opportunity? And for both issues, as a stakeholder, we'll be exploring the questions, how do I become engaged on these issues, and how can I have input into these decisions revolving around CMSP and ocean wind energy? So with that, I'll turn it back over to the two folks.
Great. Thank you, Alan. So we are moving into another discussion, feedback, and question and answer period now. I believe we have about 15 minutes for that, so please feel free to submit questions right now if you have any. And while we're waiting on that for a minute, I can just provide a brief note that Paul Anderson from Maine Seagrant is on vacation this week, and so he was not able to participate and speak to the outreach plans that Maine Seagrant has been doing and is planning to do. But I can just update that Maine Seagrant is working hard as a key part of the outreach facility of the University of Maine to work with the folks at UMaine working at Deep Sea Wind on how to have an ongoing conversation with the coastal communities who are most closely linked or located to the Monhegan test site. And so Seagrant hosted a series of four meetings this spring in towns around Muskogus Bay and is planning to do another series of meetings later this summer or early fall that would be evening discussions, you know, town hall or, you know, Grange Hall type of situation to allow people to just ask their local questions and have a bit of a discussion about, you know, the interaction with the University of Maine R&D south of Monhegan. So I'm just going to check in with Brigida on how we have any questions here, and I think we'll probably have Suzanne and Amanda answer those. Alan, if you're still on the phone, and Matt Nixon as well, we may also ask you to comment on some of those questions. And I just, this is Suzanne. Brigida is in the process of activating a poll that we hope you'll all be able to see on your screens in a few moments. Again, it's a piece we're trying out here with the technology. We do appreciate your patience as we work through the webinar technologies, and we're just hoping to get some feedback from people, again, so that we can understand the various priorities of the participants in this webinar. So take a look out for that, and we'll hopefully be able to share the feedback with you on that.
It should be popping up on your screen right now, and you will actually be able to see the answers live. So if everyone wants to fill that out, as well as continue to think of any questions they have.
We did have one question about the GMRI Coastal Marine Spatial Planning and Ocean Wind Energy meeting plan for the fall. Alan, could you speak to who the intended audience is and whether people who were interested from this group or others from the public would be able to participate in those?
The target audience is primarily the fishing industry. If people are interested, they can email me, perhaps. Is there a way I can post that, or I can just give it? If you want to email me at arounds@gmri.org, and we can talk about that. If people are interested in the session.
Thanks, Alan. As we're waiting for questions, I'll go ahead and answer a question that I feel like we get asked from time to time about this work. I think hopefully the beginning piece of this webinar helped to give you a context for what we know is going on with the potential for offshore wind development in Maine so far to date. And as you heard, there are some questions. There's the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission, reviewing the submissions that came in response to the request for proposals for the 25-megawatt project. And as we heard from Matt, there's the potential for the BOMRA Federal State Task Force to be meeting again at some point in the coming months. We don't have a proposal on the table here in Maine that we are aware of. We do know that developers have submitted responses to the PUC, but we're not aware of any publicly available proposal or sites that have been proposed. And so sometimes people ask us, why are you going out and doing this work if we don't even know if this is going to happen in Maine? And I think that, so that everyone is clear, I think that our response is the fact that we've seen a significant amount of resources and time and effort put into these discussions to date, to the point where we think this will continue to be an important issue for both the state and the region, and recognizing that many of our commercial fishermen here in Maine fish in waters throughout the region and vice versa. The fact that there is a lot going on in terms of discussions about proposed projects to our south, that we think that it's important to try to create as good of an understanding of this issue as possible, so that if and when there is a site proposed, that coastal residents and others will have already made some progress in terms of wrapping their heads around what can be incredibly technical and complicated issues. And so it's our hope that regardless of when we may hear back from the Public Utilities Commissions or BOMRA or the state, that we are working on our own timeline to try to increase our understanding of the potential for this industry in Maine.
I have another question, which is, how could people who live in long-term actually see any benefits from these projects? Are there examples that you know of how people could actually benefit locally?
Sure. There are different models that are out there that would dictate various types of benefit. One of the pieces that we hear a lot about is this potential for job creation. That clearly will depend on where the infrastructure exists for the manufacturing and installation pieces of these projects, as well as the longer-term needs around operations and maintenance. There's the figure of 15,000 jobs created to meet Maine's goals, and discussion as to whether or not Maine will see those jobs or not, but certainly that is a real interest that's driving this discussion, is to try to create some jobs around it. We do know from a price perspective that commercial offshore wind will be more expensive than what we're currently paying for at the beginning as the industry begins to develop, but that the hope is that as the industry expands, it could bring us more affordable power that could at least be stabilized over a longer period of time. And certainly when you reflect the externalities of using fossil fuel, both in terms of the environmental impact and the vulnerabilities that we may see as a state and nation, there could be benefits there as well. Some other pieces that we're particularly interested in here at the Island Institute are pieces around the potential for an ownership stake from communities, or the ability for individuals, organizations, businesses that are local to put equity into a project. There is a model further down the Atlantic seaboard around a company called Fisherman's Energy, where commercial fishermen were able to invest in that project. And as I mentioned earlier, there's the Vineyard Power proposal off of Martha's Vineyard that would be a public
a consumer-owned electric cooperative on Martha's Vineyard, working in partnership with a private offshore wind developer, basically to own a piece of a commercial offshore wind project that could get them lower and more stabilized energy costs for members of that electric cooperative on Martha's Vineyard. So I think there are different models and a lot of different ideas around those benefits that I think that, as we've heard to date, there's a lot of interest in how that would work here in the state of Maine.
Colin or Matt, do you have anything to add to that?
No, not looking at that. No, Heather, the previous question that you had, I guess you had answered or asked and answered regarding, you know, there aren't any existing proposals right now for any types of development, wind energy development. You know, there are the responses to the RFP, et cetera. I had mentioned that program, Smart from the Start, being sponsored by BOEM in particular, and the program itself, one of the concepts of that is to establish something called WEAs, wind energy areas, that in federal waters, obviously, and there's a process, one of the processes for discussing that type of development is this BOEM main task force, though there is always the opportunity for the for the Department of Interior, which BOEM is a member of or part of, to come in and name a WEA. And then wait for reaction from the state. So I think the work that you're doing now in relation to this type of this type of information distribution and data collection, at least in terms of human use, is identifying important areas is critical, because this is something that could happen. And as Suzanne mentioned earlier, even in state waters, you know, there are no laws in the state expressly forbidding any proposals from going in for any type of offshore energy development, even within state waters. So all this work is not for naught.
Thanks, Matt. So we are still entertaining questions or feedback that you'd like to share with us on ideas for collaboration around the information exchange, other questions that you have around the events we have planned, or even if you'd like to go back to the questions around where things stand with offshore wind. I'm going to hand it over to Brigida. Continue to feel free to submit those questions, but Brigida's just going to walk us through what you hopefully see on your screen in terms of feedback from the poll.
Yes, okay, so the one question on the poll was, which offshore wind energy topic are you most interested in? And it looks like we have a mix of answers. We have four people that answered permitting process, four people that answered environmental interactions, one person answered local ownership, one person has answered interaction with other marine users, one person has answered stakeholder engagement, and two people have answered interaction with commercial fisheries. That is what I see up here, which is interesting to see the mix of responses.
And I think,
so thank you.
And I think it's indicative of what we are hearing, what many of you are likely hearing, on a regular basis, is that there's a very wide range of interests and concerns and questions around this issue. And so I think in terms of trying to make more valuable information available, it is certainly a challenge to address all of those areas. But we feel fortunate that we have the ability and some generous funding to make these events happen and try to address those areas of interest in some depth.
Okay, so I think since we seem to have really answered all the questions for the case, but hopefully we will have some of you and others who you would recommend involved in some of the programming and events and forums for the rest of the year. Certainly, if you have particular areas of expertise or ideas for content, we're really interested for you to be able to help us figure out how to provide the best material and information possible. So do get in touch. Let us know if you'd just like to participate, or you have ideas for content, or you'd like to stay involved, or you want to be removed from the email list forever. So thank you again. We did just have a question about the July 27th meeting in Port Clyde. We will be able to provide more information on that. If you're particularly interested, probably the best thing to do is get in touch with one of us listed on your screen now. You should see contact information for myself, Heather, and for Suzanne here, and we can make sure that you get whatever detailed information you'd like. We'd also specifically like to thank our funders for this work, very generous support from the Oak Foundation, as well as the Maine Outdoor Heritage Fund, which is focused on production of informational materials and work from the Maine Coastal Program. I think we're also very interested to get more feedback from all of you, and if we kind of ask you to take just a couple of minutes now, since we're wrapping up before 3:30, we're going to particularly put the heavy on you to spend just a few minutes to complete the survey so that we can get a sense of the value of this last hour and a half or so, and continue to improve our programming and learn about people's need for information. So can I pass it over to have an explanation of how this survey is going to work?
Yes, so you should be seeing on your screen the survey box says Offshore Wind Energy Webinar Survey. So you just have, all you have to do is just follow the instructions, just click on the begin button, and there are four questions, and if you could kindly answer them for us, that would be great feedback.
And finally, again, we will continue with the theme of trying to make information available. We will be updating our website at the Island Institute with information from this webinar and results from the survey, so that if you can share that with other colleagues or go back and review what you might have missed. I think with that, well, thank you for your patience with any technical glitches you might have experienced, and for your participation in the webinar, and for your interest in following what I think we all recognize is a critical issue for the Gulf of Maine. Have a great afternoon.
That concludes the Island Institute webinar on offshore energy.